This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily via the internet address www.parstoday.com/en. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Intelsat 902, and Eutelsat satellite, as well as via internet. You can also listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for more details.
Now we enlighten you with verses 162 to 165 of chapter Al-An'am from the Holy Quran, recited by Murtaza Fatimi.
A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajim. Bismillahir rahmanir rahim. Qul inna salati wa nusuki wa mahyaya wa mamati lillahi rabbil alameen la sharika lah. وبذلك أمرت وأنا أول المسلمين. قل أغير الله أبغي ربا وهو رب كل شيء ولا تكسب كل نفس إلا عليها ولا تزر وازرة وزر أخرى ثم إلى ربكم مرجعكم فينبئكم بما كنتم فيه تختلفون وهو الذي جعلكم خلائف الأرض ورفع بعضكم فوق بعض درجات ليبلوكم فيما آتاكم إن ربك
In the name of God, the Compassionate, the Merciful. Say, surely my prayer and my sacrifice and my life and my death are all for Allah, the Lord of the worlds. No associate has He, and this am I commanded, and I am the first of those who submit. Say, what shall I seek, a Lord other than Allah? And He is the Lord of all things, and no soul earns evil but against itself, and no bearer of burden shall bear the burden of another. Then to your Lord is your return, so He will inform you of that in which you differed. And He it is who has made you successors in the land, and raised some of you above others by various grades, that He might try you by what He has given you. Surely, your Lord is quick to requite evil, and He is most surely the forgiving, the merciful.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
This hour's top stories. Iran says its decision to increase uranium enrichment to 60% is in response to the recent act of sabotage at Natanz nuclear facility. The U.S. state of Minnesota witnesses protests for the third straight night over the latest police killing of a black man. Some headlines. Fresh protests erupt in Pakistan following the government's refusal to expel the French ambassador over the publication of blasphemous cartoons of the Prophet Muhammad. Welcome. Iran says its decision to enrich uranium to 60% purity is in response to Sunday's act of sabotage against the country's Natanz nuclear facility. Iran's ambassador to the IAEA says the enrichment at this level will be implemented in two cascades of the new IR-4 and IR-6 centrifuges at the Natanz site. Qasem Gharibabadi added that Iran has begun the technical process and enriched uranium with the 60% purity will be produced next week. Tehran has notified the IAEA of its decision, which has been confirmed by the agency.
Iranian Deputy Foreign Minister Abbas Araghchi announces Iran's decision to increase the level of uranium enrichment from 20 to 60% and to install an additional 1,000 centrifuges at its Natanz facility, the target of a recent act of sabotage. Araghchi broke the news upon arriving in Vienna for another joint commission meeting aimed at reviving the nuclear deal. He said the International Atomic Energy Agency has been informed.
We just sent a new letter to the agency saying that we would start from tomorrow enrichment up to 60%. And that is for Iran needs in to produce certain radio isotopes needed for certain medical treatments.
Araghchi said the damaged centrifuges in Natanz would be replaced by more advanced ones, and that things would go back to normal there in the coming weeks. Signatories of the nuclear deal are expected to meet in Vienna on Thursday as negotiations continue. Iran insists that all U.S. sanctions should be lifted and their removal verified before it goes back to full compliance.
We believe that this round of negotiations is the time for the U.S. to present the list. And I hope that I can go back to Tehran with the list of sanctions which should be lifted. Otherwise, I don't believe we can continue like this. Otherwise, it would be a waste of time, actually. So let's see.
Informal discussions have already begun here with the hope of reaching an agreement on the list of U.S. sanctions that need to be lifted, after which Iran says it will discuss the verification process. Homolesky, Vienna.
The United States says it remains committed to nuclear negotiations with Iran in the light of Tehran announcing its decision to enrich uranium to 60% purity. President Joe Biden's press secretary, Jen Psaki, said the administration, that is, believes the diplomatic approach is the only path forward and that having a discussion, even an indirect one, is the best way to come up or come to a resolution. Meanwhile, France said it is readying a response to Iran's announcement. The French presidency added that the Iranian move is a serious development which needed to be coordinated at least with the remaining parties to the 2050 nuclear deal. Political commentator Jason Andrew says Iran is a sovereign nation that attempts to maintain independence to stand against the West's imperialist intervention.
Iran is developing along their own lines a peaceful nuclear technology sector and attempting to maintain its own independence away from imperialist intervention. And that is exactly what France is a part of. They are part of that imperialist bloc against Iran and other sovereign countries around the world. The United States, the UK, Israel, Saudi Arabia, and many of the like. Essentially, what they're doing is condemning Iran for doing what it is that the JCPOA says that they are allowed to do, yet they are blatantly turning a blind eye to what Israel has done, which is a crime. This is against the law. This is a violation of international law, not to mention the risk they were taking by carrying out a terrorist attack in a nuclear facility. I mean, that could have had disastrous consequences. I mean, the damage that radiation could do from accidents is well documented from Chernobyl to Fukushima. But the Western powers, the imperialist countries, are looking the other way because Israel is trying to goad Iran into doing something that would justify the Western powers and their dominant position within the JCPOA to force Iran to make more concessions or to do something which would justify them bringing the hammer down further on side of Iran and making it look like the bad guy in this situation.
Iran has summoned the ambassador of Portugal, the current holder of the European Union's rotating presidency, to protest the bloc's latest batch of anti-Tehran sanctions. Iran's foreign ministry slammed the sanctions as politically motivated. It noted that Tehran is considering counter-sanctions against the bloc. Iran has already said it will suspend comprehensive negotiations with the EU, which includes talks on human rights and all cooperation based on the talks. This includes cooperation regarding refugees and fighting terrorism and drug trafficking. On Monday, the EU added 8 Iranian officials and 3 entities to its sanctions blacklist over alleged violation of human rights. Iran has repeatedly rejected the accusation and criticized Europe for its double standards on the issue of human rights. Iraqi media reports say a facility affiliated with Israel's Mossad spy agency has been attacked in the north of the country. A security source said a number of Israeli forces were killed in the attack. The incident comes hours after an Israeli ship was attacked in the UAE port of Fujairah, causing damage but no casualties. The vessel sailing under the Bahamas flag belongs to the Israeli Ray Shipping Company and was loaded with cars. Israeli media say the attack was likely carried out with either a missile or a drone. The Israeli Daily Jerusalem Post says the incident comes 2 days after a sabotage attack on Iran's Natanz nuclear facility. It says Iran had vowed to avenge the act of sabotage at its nuclear site. Israel's Channel 12 has also quoted unnamed regime officials as blaming Iran for the ship attack. American protesters have taken to the streets in Brooklyn Center, Minnesota, for the third straight night over the police killing of a black man. Demonstrators rallied despite a police ban on public gathering. Chaotic scenes occurred when police used pepper spray and flash bombs to disperse the crowd, who responded with throwing bottles and projectiles. The third night of protests comes despite the resignation of the police chief, as well as the officer who fatally shot Donta Wright. It was killed after officers attempted to take him into custody for traffic violation on Sunday. The incident has once again sparked anger against police racism in the state of Minnesota, where police last year killed another black man, George Floyd. His death led to months of protests across the U.S. Pakistan has been the scene of violent protests after the government apparently backed out of its commitment to expel the French ambassador. Repeated publications of blasphemous cartoons of the Prophet Muhammad in France has been the main cause of anger in Pakistan. Javed Rana is in Islamabad.
It was a pitch battle in garrison city of Rawalpindi near Pakistan's capital Islamabad. These were repeated scenes across Pakistan. The violent clashes erupted after what protesters blamed the government to have backed out of its agreement with them to expel the French ambassador to Pakistan over the repeated incidents of public display and republication of blasphemous cartoons of the Prophet Muhammad. Many died and dozens of others injured from the both sides in the clashes after the protesters blocked the major railways and road links. Protesters claimed that at least 10 of their companions were killed and over 100 were arrested by the police.
This government doesn't care about the dignity of our Prophet. Obviously, people take to the streets to show their anger. We gave the government 5 months to expel the French ambassador, but they did not expel him. We will continue our protests until our demand is met, which is the expulsion of French ambassador.
Pakistan has a history of similar violent protests over the frequent incidents of blasphemy of the Prophet under the guise of freedom of expression in the West. Protecting the honor of the Prophet is the most sensitive issue in Pakistan, which attracted millions of people on the roads in the past.
Sending the French ambassador back may be a kind of a step which again could provide an immediate relief as far as the domestic political scene is concerned, but that is not going to solve the problem. Today it is France, tomorrow it will be another country, and so we need to be having a comprehensive campaign.
Pakistan has been under pressure from Paris-based anti-money laundering outfit, the Financial Action Task Force, which placed Pakistan on grey list a few years ago on the charges of terror financing. Now Pakistan needs French support together with other countries to come out of the grey list, because of which Islamabad is reluctant to expel French ambassador. However, rising anti-French sentiments in Pakistan are leaving little option with the government but to expel French ambassador. Javed Rana, Islamabad.
Now, the U.S. government has told Congress that it is proceeding with arms sales to the UAE. The $23 billion sale includes advanced fighter jets, drones, and munitions. A State Department spokesperson said Washington was seeking to reassure that its defense equipment would be used in a manner that respects human rights. That is despite worldwide criticism against the U.S. for its arms sales to Saudi Arabia and the UAE following the Arab country's war against Yemen. The U.S. military sales to the UAE were approved last year by former President Trump, but the move was temporarily suspended by the administration of President Biden. China has defended its military exercises in the Taiwan Strait amid escalating tensions with Chinese Taipei and the United States. A spokesman for the Chinese Taipei Affairs Office says those combat drills are necessary to safeguard its national security. The spokesman has urged the U.S. to abide by the One China principle and properly handle the issue of Chinese Taipei. China has deployed 25 fighter jets and bombers to the Taiwan Strait to join its aircraft carrier there. Chinese military has carried out exercises near Chinese Taipei recently and is planning more. Chinese Taipei has warned about the possibility of China launching an attack against it. Meanwhile, the U.S. has sent an unofficial delegation to Chinese Taipei. The White House says the move shows President Biden's commitment to the self-ruled island. Coronavirus infections have hit a new peak in several Latin American countries as the number of cases and fatalities keep rising worldwide, unfortunately. Argentina reported a record 27,000 cases in the past 24 hours alone. The government is now considering new emergency measures and restrictions. In Colombia, President Iván Duque announced a lockdown in several cities in an attempt to halt the advance of a third wave of the disease. In Brazil, the world's third hardest hit nation in terms of total cases, the Senate has launched a probe into President Jair Bolsonaro's handling of the outbreak. He has drawn widespread criticism, actually, for his approach to the coronavirus. And Uruguay, by the way, has gone from one of the least affected countries to registering the most new daily cases per capita in the world. Remaining with the issue, but in Europe, France tries to catch up its delay in the vaccination campaign against COVID-19. A large number of vaccination centers are being inaugurated, but medical experts say that the real problem is actually the lack of doses, not the lack of vaccination places. Our correspondent Kristen Hunt is in Paris.
After the Velodrome and the Hippodrome, France has now the Vaccinodrome. This is a huge vaccination center against the coronavirus, the state de France in Saint-Saint-Denis, the Paris suburb, one of the poorest areas in the country. France has been one of the slowest European Union countries to vaccinate its population, and the government tries now to catch up. But medical experts say that it's still too little and too late.
The vaccinodrome is in theory a good thing for a massive vaccination, but the problem is the lack of jabs in France. Opening huge stadiums to vaccinate only 1,000 people a day is counterproductive because jabs are transferred from smaller vaccination units to the vaccinodromes. So today, there is not really an acceleration of the vaccination campaign in France.
Local vaccination centers like this one in the east of Paris are complaining about the shortage of vaccine doses. Many different vaccines exist today in the world, but they are not produced in enough quantity. The reason? EU governments, including France, refuse to import and produce massively available vaccines like the relatively cheap Russian Sputnik vaccine. Furthermore, the pharmaceutical industry blocks any lift on patents.
The solution proposed by South Africa and India and supported by 100 countries on lifting the patents on vaccines has been refused by France and other EU member states. If you lift the patents, you can produce enough vaccine doses.
Medical experts plea for free vaccines as a public service. That's the exact opposite of what the pharmaceutical industry and the EU governments are doing today. And the lack of vaccine doses puts poor people directly in danger, especially here in the popular northern suburb of Paris. The World Health Organization has criticized France for the slowness of its vaccination campaign. Huge vaccination centers like this will not resolve the problem if the number of vaccine doses do not increase seriously. Chris Den Hunt, Paris.
And Muslims around the world are marking the holy month of Ramadan. That is the second time they observe the fasting month amid the coronavirus pandemic. Yusuf Jalali is in Tehran.
The Ramadan crescent moon has been sighted in Iran, and this means the fasting month begins on Wednesday. During the holy month, Muslims abstain from eating and drinking from dawn to dusk as a means to practice self-restraint. In Iran, restaurants close during the day and instead work longer hours overnight. This is especially the case for confectionaries, where they add these special sweets to their shelves every year in Ramadan.
Iranians usually break their fast by eating sweet and energetic foods. So every year in Ramadan, we bake Zulbiyan baklava because they refresh the body after hours of fasting. You can find them in every Iranian confectionery during Ramadan.
This is the second year in a row that Muslims observe the fasting month amid the coronavirus pandemic. With Iran now under a partial nationwide lockdown, religious authorities have ordered that all mass religious ceremonies be either canceled or held in open-air environments with social distancing.
I pray to God to help us overcome the coronavirus. Unfortunately, this year, as in the previous Ramadan, the pandemic has kept us from gathering together to practice the Ramadan rituals.
Ramadan has always been a chance to take part in charity works, and now that the pandemic has unemployed many people, Muslims feel bound to rush for help.
During Ramadan, charity institutes ramp up their activities. This year, many people have lost their income as a result of the pandemic, so more families depend on donations to be able to break their fast.
Ramadan is the ninth month of the lunar calendar, where months begin and end depending on the movement of the moon in its orbit around the Earth. At the start of each month, depends on the sighting of the new moon the day before. Some Muslim nations, such as Iraq and Lebanon, started the fasting month a day ahead of Iran.
To Muslims, Ramadan is more than just a time to abstain from eating and drinking. They find it an opportunity to purify the soul from materialistic desires and polish it with spirituality. This year, they use the occasion as a chance to ask God to make it the last Ramadan. that is marked with the coronavirus. Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Okay, that's about it for me.
A diverse range of programs. Spirituality. Youth. Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Culture. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
Supplication on Wednesdays. In the name of Allah, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate. Praise belongs to Allah, who appointed the night to be a garment, and sleep for a rest, and day he appointed for a rising. To thee belongs praise, for thou roused me from my sleep. And hadst thou willed, thou wouldst have made it everlasting, an everlasting praise that will never be cut off, and whose number the creatures will never count. O Allah, to thee belongs praise, for thou created, then proportioned, and ordained and decreed, and gave death and bestowed life, and made sick and healed, and made well and afflicted, and sat upon the throne and encompassed the kingdom. I supplicate thee with the supplication of one whose mediation is weak, whose stratagems have been cut off, whose term has drawn near, whose expectation from this world has shrunk, whose neediness for thy mercy has intensified, whose remorse for his neglect has become great, whose slips and stumbles have become many, and whose repentance is devoted sincerely to thy face. So bless Muhammad, the seal of the prophets, and his household, the good, the pure, and provide me with the intercessions of Muhammad, Allah bless him and his household, and deprive me not of his companionship. Surely thou art the most merciful of the merciful. O Allah, decree for me on Wednesday four things. Induce me to be strong in obedience to thee, to be joyful in worshipping thee, to be desirous of thy reward, and to abstain from that which would make incumbent upon me thy painful punishment. Thou art gentle to whom thou wilt. Thank you.
the month of God. In the name of God, the compassionate, the merciful. Salam, dear listeners, and welcome to the program. Dear listeners, Ramadan has come again and we have been invited to fast in this blessed month. From today, you'll be listening to a special series of programs titled The Month of God. This series will consist of three parts: moralities, Islamic laws, and supplications. We hope that God will accept your and our acts of worship and prayers. Stay tuned, please. The blessed month of Ramadan has come again. According to the Islamic narrations, this month is the month of God and God's banquet for the Islamic Ummah. God receives the faithful in this month with warm hospitality. God's banquet, unlike the worldly ones, is spiritual. In fact, God tells his servants to abstain from pleasures, even the permissible ones like eating, drinking, and so on. Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny, says, Ramadan has been called such because it burns the sins. In other words, the root of the word Ramadan in Arabic means burning. The fifth infallible successor of the Prophet, Imam Muhammad Baqir, peace upon him, also says on the virtue of this blessed month, he who fasts the day in this month and spends the night in worship will be pure as the day he was born from his mother. The Prophet of Islam said on the threshold of the month of Ramadan, O people, the month of God has turned toward you with blessing, mercy, and forgiveness. It is month that is the best of months with God. Its days and nights are the best of days and months, and its hours are the best of hours. It is the month in which you have been invited to God's banquet and have been favored and dignified by Him. In this month, whenever you come toward God and sit at His presence, God will accept your prayer. In this month, help the poor and the destitute, respect the elderly, be kind toward children, and visit your relatives. O people, he who makes his temperament good in this month, on the day when steps slip over the Sirat bridge, will pass over it easily. Thus, ask God with honesty, sincerity, and a pure heart to help you for fasting and recitation of the Quran, because miserable is the one who is deprived of God's mercy in this blessed and bounteous month. According to the Islamic laws, the sink of the crescent of Ramadan is possible in five ways. First, the individual sees it himself. Second, he becomes certain through hearing from others whom he trusts. Third, two just men say that they have seen the new moon. Fourth, the preceding month, Sha'ban, is 30 days. Fifth, the just ruler of the Islamic country announces the start of the month of Ramadan. The real property and wealth of human being is supplication to God. To achieve this property requires learning the practice of the Prophet and leaders of religion. After the Prophet of Islam, His infallible successors have bequeathed to us ample concepts in the form of prayers and supplications. A considerable amount of these prayers and supplications belong to the blessed month of Ramadan. On the first eve of Ramadan, the fourth infallible successor of the Prophet, Imam Sajjad, peace upon him, used to recite this prayer. Praise belongs to God who has guided us to his gratitude and made us worthy of thanking his goodness and granted us the reward of the righteous. And praise belongs to God who graced us with his religion and specialized us for his path and caused us to march in his ways of goodness, to move in them with his grace and favor toward his satisfaction. Such a praise that he accepts from us and thereby becomes pleased with us. And praise belongs to God who designated among those paths his month Ramadan, the month of fasting, the month of Islam, the month of purity, the month of trial, the month of uprising, the month in which he sent down the Quran, a guidance for people and clear proofs of guidance and differentiator of right from wrong, and for this reason clarified the superiority of this month over other months on the basis of ample respect and obvious virtues. So he forbade what is permissible in other months, and in order to revere it, he prohibited foods and drinks in it and determined the specific time limit for it, which he, the exalted and high, does not allow to be preceded or delayed. Then he made one of its nights superior over the nights of 1,000 months and called it Night of Qadr, in which angels and Ruh, the greatest angel, descend upon their Lord's commandments for every affair. And that night is healthy and blessed till dawn for any of his servants due to his ordainment that has become binding. O God, greet Muhammad and his progeny and inspire us the recognition of this month's superiority and its glorification and abstention from the forbidden acts, and assist us for fasting in it through keeping our bodily organs aloof from sins and using them in what satisfies you. Help us not to hear with our ears what is futile, and not to see with our eyes what is pervert, and not to extend our hands toward what is forbidden, and not to walk toward what you have banned. And help us so that our stomachs are not filled except with halal, and our tongues do not articulate but for what you have said. And help us so that we do not strive except for what takes us near to your reward, and so that we do not acquire except what preserves us from your punishment. Then purify all these from pretension and show off and seeking of reputation in a way that we do not associate in them anyone with you and do not pursue any purpose but you.
We are with you. What about you? IRIB English Radio.
onto our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
America.
Hot Pine.
Wherever you go in this capital of America and meet the people who are the most informed about how the government really works, you hear that the system isn't working and that the voters are not in charge. You hear it from a member of Congress.
Who controls America? An elite group of people who function in a stratosphere globally and beyond the Constitution, beyond the reach of government. They have enormous resources.
You hear it from an expert on our elections.
Our politics are being hijacked. They're being hijacked by anyone, by people who are willing to spend millions of dollars to, you know, elect or defeat certain candidates.
You hear it from the head of a public interest group.
We have a plutocracy. We have a corporate plutocracy, and the rules in Washington are written by the corporate lobbyists working on behalf of the biggest corporate interests in the country.
And you hear about lobbyists from a veteran former congressional staffer who would only talk to us if his face and voice were altered.
99% of the people that I see lobbying Congress are white men and women who you can tell are wear very nice expensive suit and ties and dresses. And they are going into the Republican offices. I rarely see African Americans here. I rarely see Hispanics. I rarely see Asians. I rarely see Muslims. It's like you see these very well-dressed guys who just came off Lear jets, and you can tell they're right out of the country club. And they're going to the Republican offices asking for a tax cut of some kind.
These are not just opinions. This well-researched book by William Domhoff details how the government today is being run by powerful elite forces outside the government. As we will see, his conclusions are supported by experienced insiders here in Washington, D.C. All of these insiders say that money and special interests are now in control. They too ask, who rules America? In Washington, we spoke with leaders of three respected watchdog organizations that specialize in researching and analyzing hidden forces operating behind the scenes. Public Citizen focuses on corruption and accountability issues. Robert Weissman is their president and described how laws get passed.
How does a piece of legislation emerge? How does it become law? How does it get implemented and how does it get enforced? At every step of the way, you really have sort of corporations in whatever industry dominating the process.
Why don't congressmen, the people we elect, challenge the system?
Well, they are products of the system. And so they've got an inherent bias of favoring it. Look, they've succeeded in the system one way or another. And those who challenge it are going to have to fight really entrenched power. So there, of course, there are many of them who are very good and who do challenge the system. But by and large, people got to Washington because they figured out how to make the system work for them. Even if they came in as insiders, most of them were quickly educated on the ways that things really do work in Washington if they hope to get things done or get reelected. And they succumb to their corporate interests.
Where does the money come from? The top 100 donors have given 77% of the money going to super PACs. That means 1% of the donors are giving 64% of the money. This is a tiny elite that can afford to make the contributions that are going to be most influential in this election cycle.
Website opensecrets.org documents where all the money in politics originate. Sheila Krumholz oversees it as the executive director of the Center for Responsive Politics.
Well, I think many of the people who are concerned about money's role in in Washington and how it greases the skids for private narrow interests to kind of rule the day, believe that the money is that members of Congress and policymakers control the levers of power, but that the donors, the kind of patrons of these people, are operating the strings. The politicians are kind of the visible locus of power, but the people behind them really are calling the shots.
How do we find out who those people are?
Well, we have millions upon millions of records of donations to federal candidates, political action committees, including leadership PACs, which are their kind of slush funds that they control, and the parties. We also can see money going directly to the super PACs. These are the political action committees, which are supposedly or are only giving contributions to groups that are spending money to run independent expenditures, independent of the campaigns and parties. The problem is, of course, that there's this secret pot of cash being collected by groups that do not disclose where the money's coming from, and they are running advertising, political ads, which are often quite damning and nasty and not sometimes irresponsible, but are highly influential, and we have no idea where their money is coming from.
She showed us what their data shows, a small minority controlling the process with very few millionaires funding all politics.
There are 610 registered super PACs, 95 of them are ponying up the money for the ads so far. But this chart really demonstrates what a dramatic increase we've seen in spending on advertising by these groups. So in 2012, we're seeing over $100 million spent. That's a 100% increase over the amount spent in 2008 and a 400% increase over last cycle.
This is a who's who of who's lobbying in Washington between 1998 and 2012. The U.S. Chamber of Commerce spent $831 million. The American Medical Association, $269 million. General Electric, $268 million. The Pharmaceutical Research and Manufacturers of America admit to $219 million-plus for lobbying, and there are many, many more. 2012 could be a turning point in American politics because of all the big money that's literally being invested. Mary Boyle is the vice president of Common Cause.
In who is ruling America, you certainly have to look at the people who are giving the most money to political campaigns. They are highly influential. People who give a lot of money to political campaigns, millions of dollars, you know, want something for return. They tend to be really savvy business people who have made a lot of money because, they know what they're doing, and they don't make investments without wanting an investment on their return.
It's unfortunate, but obviously it buys media time. It also buys constant mail efforts. And also, obviously, you support candidates who will ultimately come to the United States Congress who may vote your way.
The largest contributors to political campaigns in America are the financial institutions. The second largest contributors are large real estate developers. That means that if you're running for office, you have to get elected by promising to support policies that are supported by the real estate sector and by the financial sector that lends to the real estate sector.
And doesn't this really kind of put the democracy under threat?
Yeah. I mean, corporations are free now due to Citizens United and a couple of other court rulings to give more money than they have ever been allowed to be before. And that is certainly a threat to our democracy, because what it does is it drowns out the voices of regular people.
It's, discouraging in one sense, in that, you know, the election of 2008 showed a tremendous number of people who want change, and yet there seems to be at every turn change is being resisted by minorities that are very skillful at undermining change.
Certainly, 2008 was the, change election, and we have been disappointed there has not been more change coming from the White House. It is so expensive to run for office, whether it's a presidency or the state legislature. that you just have to go out and start raising money from people who want something in return to run for office.
The money in politics just doesn't finance candidates. It pays for lobbying. In 2011, there were 12,654 lobbyists spending $3.32 billion on influencing politicians, agencies, and regulators.
I was with a group of 20 women from the Middle East last week, and we said they wanted to know about Code Pink and our work. And I said, come to Congress and meet us. And we met in the cafeteria, and we looked all around and said, all these people are lobbying Congress, and they think they're going to have some influence. But the influence doesn't happen here. There's a special place in the Capitol that special people go to that we can't go to, and that's where the people who have money go to do the lobbying. And they also have their special parties where they pay a lot of money to have a face-to-face with their congressperson. That's where things get done.
The scholar Francis Fox Piven says that's because of another problem. Not all Americans can or do vote.
We have a very developed, very twisted, and very distorted system of electoral representation. It is distorted not only by big money, although that's certainly very, very important because of the advertising and the campaigning that it makes possible. A lot of people do not, in fact, have the franchise, and even those who vote are not represented fairly. People in smaller states have more representation and so forth.
So this helps explain why small but well-funded groups like the pro-Israel lobby or pro-military lobby can have so much impact. Joanne Landy has examined who makes foreign policy.
It's an informal network of the people who rule America. Even though they don't go around wearing signs saying, we rule America, that's who makes the policy, whether it's with politicians or whether it's with think tanks or with the military or, you know, I mean, they're all interconnected.
Landy says these lobbies are more united than divided.
You know, there are disagreements among them, but there are disagreements about methods, not goals, you know. So some people think you should get rid of some nuclear weapons. Other people think you should hold on to them all. But the differences are really, they cover the gamut from A to B, as they used to say.
The sort of day-by-day run-of-the-mill reality is that those who have high positions in politics and strong connections with moneyed interests and the moneyed interests themselves run the country.
We are now on the way to the Congress, which now enjoys less than a 10% approval rating from the public.
You know how you know a congressperson? Not only do they have a little pin here, but they never carry anything. It's always an assistant who's carrying something. And all they get is people who are fawning over them. And, you know, so they're in their bubble. And they don't recognize, I think, that the country is so cynical about them.
The congressmen are cynical, too. I literally ran into Representative John Conyers in a dark hallway. He's the longest-serving member. He complains that they are being deluged by lobbyists.
Are you seeing a lot of Wall Street people donating to Congress, trying to stop the reforms?
You don't see that, but you know it's going on. They haven't stopped.
I mean, the Congress wanted to reform financial, you know, the financial laws, and it seems like they're being stopped at the regulatory level by all these donations from members of Congress, I mean, from big banks and Wall Street.
Well, it'll show up. It shows up on the quarterlies, but I have no reason to believe that there's been any cessation of that or reduction. And so you get the same result, stagnation.
JP Morgan Chase has shocked the markets by revealing a trading loss of over $2 billion.
2 weeks later, it was reported that the huge bank JP Morgan Chase lost $2 billion gambling on exotic derivative products.
And what they called a synthetic credit portfolio.
If Jamie Dimon makes this mistake, because we know he's good, well, what the hell's going on at Citigroup? Bank of America.
Thanks to the mistakes by JP Morgan, which is the biggest U.S. bank in terms of assets, rippled through the financial world. For many, it brings back memories of 2008, when big banks' risky bets threatened to collapse the financial system.
It was later reported that the bank's lobbyists had fought against a new rule that, if passed, would have prevented this giant loss. The internet buzzed with the bad news.
Because this is the derivatives market, this is very important. Could pan out to be nothing. Largest U.S. bank, you know, best buddies with the Fed, and of course, this is a whole lot of debt.
But none of the commentary I saw discussed the lobbying by J.P. Morgan Chase.
You see banks time and time again getting into problems, slipping up, and you've got America's biggest bank, J.P. Morgan, doing exactly that. And frankly, the banks are their own worst enemy.
We know we were sloppy. We know we were stupid. We know there was bad judgment. We don't know if any of that's true yet. Now, of course, regulators should look at something like this. That's their job. So, you know, we are totally open kimono with regulators, and they will come to their own conclusions. But we intend to fix it, learn from it, and be a better company when it's done.
One of the amazing lessons, I think, of everything that led up to the crash is they can't control themselves, even to the extent that they will destroy their own industry, even to the extent they will destroy their own companies. The short-term profit motive seeps in so many pores of individuals and divisions and offices and whole companies. They will destroy themselves. So we definitely can't trust them to figure out how to control themselves.
Congressman Jesse Jackson Jr., the son of the famous civil rights leader, has been representing Chicago's 2nd District for 17 years. He's consumed with investigating and explaining how the system was set up historically to serve states' rights and special interests.
I filed an amendment to the Constitution to guarantee us the right to a public education of equal high quality. Why? Because every American that's in a public school ought not be in states' rights slavery. In other words, the lesson of the African American overcoming the Constitution with respect to states' rights was not heeded through time by the American people, and it is the exact same system that they are stuck in today, and they just don't know it.
We asked him why Congress has become so dysfunctional.
I've never seen it more polarized. I've never seen it more divided along geographical lines, along factional lines, along economic, political lines. It's not what the democracy was conceived to be. It's not what it was supposed to evolve into. And unfortunately, the American people are the victims of this process.
How would you answer that question? Who rules America?
There are two types of material power in this country and in the world. One is political and one is economic. We the people have the power politically to control and determine the economic system. And there is a constant struggle between people power and economic power. We the people control, through the political system, our economic destiny and the economic destiny of the nation. Increasingly, the heavy hand of the economic system is controlling the political system and manipulating the people. Who controls America? An elite group of people who function in a stratosphere globally and beyond the Constitution, beyond the reach of government. They have enormous resources. They own the media, the power to investigate. They get to shape the narrative of the stories. They get to model and position candidates for public office and shape an image in front of the American people, an image that oftentimes does not jive with reality, and yet the American people see this image of leadership and they vote for it, only to find out the human frailties and the shortcomings of the individual at a later date.
We met a former congressional staffer who worked on the Hill for a leading legislator for 12 years. He agreed to talk with us only if we blacked out his face and distorted his voice. He was scathing in his description of how decisions get made.
This is a great institution, but unfortunately, you have an untold amount of members of Congress that spend 60% of their time raising money, and then because they got to run every 2 years, which makes no sense, they have to raise millions of dollars just to be competitive, to go on television, because the CBS, ABC, and NBC, and CNN charge this outrageous amount of money to get TV commercials. It ought to be free or very low cost. So what happens is these members of Congress are relying on well-intentioned staffers. Many of them are just out of college. Many of them were interns. to make major decisions on foreign policy and domestic policy and health care and employment and jobs, and they're not really mature enough.
He also told us many of the staffers get bought off by special interests and big donors.
And a lot of these young people are just out of college, just out of graduate school. They have to pay back these enormous college loans and graduate school loans. They're paying unbelievable rent in Washington, D.C. and Northern Virginia, oftentimes more than a third of their income. A lot of them are taken care of out of work, family members. So there's a pressure for them, I'm sorry, on them to go work for the money and interest on K Street. A lot of staffers, even progressive staffers, have left the Hill and worked for the large drug companies, worked for the oil companies.
Well, it's usually the biggest industry, it's usually the biggest companies in whatever industry you're looking at. If you're looking at overall national economic policy, Wall Street is the dominant influence. You don't know what's happening in the pharmaceutical industry, and you know, there the big pharma's got calls the shots. As within the financial industry, which factions are most important, it's still really the biggest institutions that set the agenda.
There have been polls on where Americans think our money goes in our government, and just about nobody has a clue. People wildly overestimate how much goes to aid. And of course, part of that is because we talk about weaponizing foreign nations as aid. And they wildly underestimate how much goes to the military.
And yet, says our whistleblowing former congressional aide, the real problem is not just corporate power.
The biggest problem in America is not the corporations. It's not even necessarily the money for campaigns. The biggest problem is that the American people don't really organize themselves in their congressional districts to mitigate the power of special interests. They're not utilizing their democracy because they don't know how the game works. The donors know exactly how the game works. You give a member of Congress the money, they're going to probably do what they've asked them to do.
Coming up next, the role Wall Street plays.
Wall Street, the banks, and the financial industry writ large is the single largest source of campaign cash in the United States, and it has been for years, if not decades.
Next time on Who Rules America.
President Joe Biden will withdraw American combat troops from Afghanistan by 11th of September, declaring an end to the nation's longest war and overruling warnings from his military advisors that the departure could prompt a resurgence of the same threats that sent hundreds of thousands of troops into combat over the past 20 years. The article you're about to hear has been written by the New York Times journalists Helen Cooper, Thomas Gibbons Neff, and Eric Schmidt. The piece is titled, Biden to Withdraw All Combat Troops from Afghanistan by 11th of September. President Joe Biden will withdraw American combat forces from Afghanistan by 11th of September this year, declaring an end to the nation's longest war and overruling warnings from his military advisors that the departure could prompt a resurgence of the same threats that sent hundreds of thousands of troops into combat over the past 20 years. In rejecting the Pentagon's push to remain until Afghanistan security forces can assert themselves against the Taliban, Joe Biden forcibly stamped his views on a policy he has long debated but never controlled. Now, after years of arguing against an extended American military presence in Afghanistan, the president is doing things his way, with a deadline set for the 20th anniversary of the 9/11 attacks. A senior Biden administration official said the president had come to believe that a conditions-based approach would mean that American troops would never leave Afghanistan. President Biden's decision would pull all American troops out of Afghanistan some 20 years after former President George W. Bush ordered an invasion after the September 11 attacks on New York and the Pentagon. The war was launched with widespread international support, but it became the same long, bloody, unpopular slog that forced the British to